Welcome to today's podcast on project management, brought to you by ACT Training. My name's Sam Holland. I'm the curriculum developer for all the media and marketing courses delivered by ACT. Today's podcast is covering Unit 404 of the Digital Marketing 4 course. The idea of this podcast is that this should be a recap on the workshop session that you will have recently attended on project management for Unit 404. And you can listen to this podcast now to prepare for the assignment that you're about to walk into and take. So, in addition to preparing you for the assignment, what we would hope that you get out of this podcast and out of the workshop session is just a good overview of the key concepts of project management, the principles of project management. We're going to have a little look at a system called PRINCE2, which we're going to briefly have a little look over, and we're going to run through some of the key ideas of project management and how you can apply them to any sort of project, and with a particular focus obviously on digital marketing. So with that in mind, let's jump right in. So the first thing we went through is just straight up, what is a project? So we had a nice little definition. So Google Dictionary describes a project as an individual or collaborative enterprise that is carefully planned to achieve a particular aim. And I think that's quite a good little definition there. Nice and succinct. So just to add to that a little bit, I think it's fair to say, so a project has a beginning, a middle and an end, and like a process which is ongoing. A project is a well-defined task, usually involving a number of different people working towards the same goal. So with that in mind, project management is simply the process of managing that project and taking responsibility for it from start to finish. So obviously some businesses might work solely on projects. If you think of things like construction industries, they work on a project right through until its completion, whereas other businesses might work mostly on processes, but might have projects running to achieve certain goals, make changes, or undertake something new. So as an example, ACT Training, we're an example of a business that runs on processes, but we often undertake projects to improve our curriculum or improve our delivery. So as you can see, there's two ways of sort of looking at it in a business standpoint. In project management, there's four stages, and this is how we'll sort of be looking at our project going forward. So the four stages of project management are, first of all, planning. So in the planning stage, we'll identify our goals, our aims and objectives, we'll identify our stakeholders, we'll define the problem that we're trying to solve, and put down a rough idea of the steps that we're going to take to solve that problem. The next stage could be described as the build-up. The build-up stage is where we're just about to start implementing the project, so we're getting everything in place to make it go. The build-up entails actually assembling our team, planning the tasks that we're going to complete, developing the schedule and developing the budget, so we're fully ready to just make a start then at that point. So to follow the build-up, the next stage is implementation. Implementation is where we're tracking and monitoring, we're reporting, we're firefighting, the project is running, so we're just managing the project and dealing with the issues as they arise. The final and fourth stage of project management is the closeout. So at this point, the project is complete. So we either need to do a handover or we need to complete the project. We'll do a review, we'll figure out the lessons we've learned, and we'll come up with a final report. So that's sort of how we're going to be looking at our projects now going forward for the rest of this podcast. In the assignment, you will be asked about principles of project management. So with that in mind, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something called PRINCE2. So PRINCE2 is sort of a standard of project management used by UK government, NATO, all sorts of places. It's an internationally recognised standard, and it's used for all public projects in the UK. PRINCE2 stands for Projects in Controlled Environments, and it's the second version. So it was originally used for software development projects, but PRINCE2 was made as a more generic framework for projects of any type, size, or description. So there's a lot to PRINCE2, and you can do whole massive courses on it to be accredited to deliver PRINCE2 projects. Obviously, that's a little bit outside of the scope of what we're doing today, so what I wanted to talk to you about in terms of PRINCE2 is just the principles entailed in PRINCE2. So for a project to be said to be using PRINCE2, it needs to adhere to the seven principles. And so we'll run through these now. The first principle of Prince 2 is continued business justification. So what this principle entails is at each stage of the project team will check whether the project is still viable and still a benefit to the overall objective and the needs of the organisation. If it's found to not be viable or of value, the project will then be scrapped or amended to make sure that it's worthwhile. In a Prince 2 project, you'll have a document in place called a business case. This is something that you can Google, you can find templates for this if you want to look into this in a bit more depth. But the business case is a very important document in a Prince 2 project, and it's something that's referred to throughout the project, again, just to make sure that we've got continued business justification. The next principle is learn from experience. So fairly straightforward, I think this one, a lessons log should be kept throughout each project so project teams can learn from mistakes or from good practice from previous or concurrent projects. This helps us to avoid repeating the same mistakes and reinventing the wheel if the problem's been solved before. So again, this principle assumes that you're going to have a document, which again, you can Google, you can find templates for a lessons log. What it's saying is that every project that you run should have a lessons log, and it should be made available to other people in your organisation so that they can learn from your mistakes or your moments of good practice. The next principle of Prince 2 is defined roles and responsibilities. So everyone involved in a Prince 2 project should have defined roles and responsibilities from the offset in order to understand the limits of each other's authority, everyone's responsibilities, everyone's culpabilities. At the very top of the ladder is the project board. Now that can consist of stakeholders, the organisation's directors, that sort of thing. Generally the people who have the most to gain or lose from the project outputs. Below the project board is the project manager or the project management team, which is you. And then beneath that is the project team, which are the people that you're managing to make the project work. Now, knowing these defined roles and responsibilities means that everybody knows what everybody else does, everybody knows what everybody else can do. If there's a problem, we know who to go to. It just means that things can move a little bit more quickly and a little bit more fluidly. The next principle is manage by stages. Again, nice and simple here. Projects should be managed should be broken up into manageable chunks, and then they should be reviewed at the end of each stage in order to learn lessons and to check the business justification. So what it's saying is that we need to, if we're putting our project down into tasks, we need to understand those tasks and potentially split them down even further so that they're manageable, so that we can keep track of them. If it's a massive, massive task that's likely to take, you know, the length of the project or half the length of the project, then maybe we need to break that down into further tasks just to make it a bit more easy to get our heads around and easy to track and easy to monitor and easy to report back to stakeholders, back to the project board. The next principle then is manage by exception. So the project board or the organisational directors or whatever it is should not need to be bothered with every single step of the project. Otherwise, this negates the need for the project manager. Instead, the board should identify tolerances, which allows the project to go slightly off without needing to run it by them. So tolerances should be given in things like time, budget, quality, scope, benefit, and risk. So what that means is that the project board in the initial stages will give tolerances. So they'll say, well, you know, you don't need to bother us if you go over budget as long as it's by no more than 5%. Or, you know, the scope of the project could be reduced to take out a couple of minor features, but if any of these features are affected, then we need to know about it. So it's managing by exception. It's understanding the tolerances that have been set by the project board, and the project manager then can sort of have a little bit of wiggle room if things go wrong or when things go wrong. The next principle then is focus on products. So products in this instance refers to the outcomes of the project. So a detailed product description should be written at the very beginning of the project in order to ensure that all stakeholders have the same expectations as to the outcome of the project. So by focusing on the products of a project, it allows everybody to be just singing from the same hymn sheet and allows us to identify requirements in function, cost, quality, resources, that sort of thing, very early on. Now, for me, this is an important thing that, to understand. Like I said, make sure that everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet, but to make sure that all stakeholders have the same expectations. A lot of the time, the expectations of the stakeholders for the outcome of a project might be wildly different. You know, if you're doing a project like we would have talked about in the workshop there, where we're doing an event that encompasses live music venues, but also Welsh Assembly Government. The Welsh Assembly Government are likely to have different reasons for doing it than the local music venues. So they're going to have different expectations and different desires for what they want to get out of it. So having a detailed product description showing exactly what we're going to get out of it helps to manage those expectations and make sure that everybody is happy with what they're going to get. The final principle then for Prince 2 is tailor to the project's environment. So depending on the type of project, these principles are going to all manifest in different ways. For a large, sizable project, we should have a business case, we should have a lessons log, we should be able to see an organisational structure, and there's all sorts of other supporting documents that you could have in a Prince 2 project. However, some projects only last a week or a day even, so maybe it's, you know, just a waste of your time to write a full business case and to, you know, keep a detailed lessons log where it could all be managed a bit more informally, but you are still keeping these principles in mind. So adhering to Prince 2 doesn't mean that you need to use every single document that they advise, just that you follow the core principles and you tailor them then to suit the environment of your project. So that's the principles of Prince 2. That is something that will come up in the assignment. So potentially have a little Google around, do a bit of independent research there and just see if you can get a good understanding on these seven principles and have a think of them in terms of how you would apply them to your project. If it's a project that you're working on in work, if it's a marketing campaign, if it's an event, if it's, you know, developing some sort of content, you know, these are all projects and these are all things that you can apply these seven principles to. So what are some of the benefits of project management? So project management obviously allows us to track things a lot more easily, so we can get good lessons from it, we can get a good understanding of the successes and failures of a project, and we can use that to inform future projects, which means obviously that's going to result in better productivity or better output in future projects, having made a detailed lessons log, for instance. It might also increase efficiency in a business, in an organisation, or in a process. Having a project managed appropriately can help us be more efficient and more productive. It can help potentially improve your customer satisfaction. If you're managing the project appropriately, then everybody's informed and it means that the customers are going to get a better result. Have a think again, consider the benefits of project management in terms of projects that you've run before. It may be that they result in just an organisation being more effective in their delivery. It might mean improvements in quality or output. It might mean that we're getting development opportunities within the project team. Potentially there's an increase in the organisation's competitive edge. Maybe we're improving our branding or improving our marketing. Consider it in terms of the projects that you run and some of the benefits there. Try and relate them to a project when you're asked. So moving forward then, what we're going to do is we're going to run through the four stages of project management now. The first stage is, as we said, planning a project. So we're going to come up with considerations, we're going to look at how to set clear goals, we're going to look at trade-offs, resource requirements, roles and responsibilities, communication needs, and risk assessments. These are all things that we need to cover in the planning stage of the project. First instance then, we need to look at what considerations we need to take into account. So let's say, you know, we've been given a brief, we've been given our project and said, this is a project that we'd like you to manage. Obviously the first thing you think is, you know, brilliant, I've got a project, you know, something I can sink my teeth into. Before you agree to it, what considerations do we need to take into account? So we need to consider reading this project proposal. Will it be viable? Is this going to actually do what we need it to do? What I'm saying here is we need to figure out what the problem is and whether this is actually going to solve it. You know, it may well be that, you know, an organisation thinks, you know, sales are reducing, so we need to increase our marketing. But doing a little bit of research here, it's actually there's a competitor who's put out something better, so we need to increase the scope of the product. You know, before we take on a project, that's doomed to fail. We need to understand what is the problem that we're trying to solve, and will this project solve it? So some of the considerations that we can take into account are things like the financial viability of the project. We've been asked to do all sorts of stuff with very, very little money or very little time. Time is another consideration that we need to take into account. Is there enough time to get this project complete? Is it the right time of year to be taking on this sort of project? You know, are we doing a music festival in December? Well, obviously that's not going to that's not going to be viable. It's the wrong time of year. Legal considerations are another one. Is this all above board? Are there any legal issues that we need to take into account that are going to affect our ability to complete the project in time? Resources. What sort of resources are we going to need, and do we have them available? Is there a possibility that we can get the resources that we require in order to complete the project? If there's not, can we get around that? Constraints. So what other constraints could there be? There's things like obviously we've got legal constraints, but there could also be regulatory requirements. So things within your industry, within obviously ACT, we have to work within the boundaries of the awarding bodies and things like that. Other bodies who might inspect us for quality and things like that, we've got to work within what they're asking us to do. So does this project take all those constraints into consideration? What other dependencies might there be? What other things are we depending on to get this project complete? Are those things definitely going to come through? Are we depending on another project to be complete by this date before we can start the project? If that's the case, maybe we ought to check on that and just make sure that project is going to be complete and everything's going to come in on time. Otherwise, it's going to affect our ability to complete the project to the agreed time and to the agreed standards. Other things that we might have to consider are things like confidentiality. So, for instance, restrictions in relation to GDPR, things like that. We need to consider who has access to the data and who has access to the project documentation. All of these things are things that we need to know before we start, well, before we even agree to the project, really. But once we've agreed, we can start looking at how we're gonna achieve it. How are we gonna set clear goals so that everybody knows what we're trying to do? So the very first step then is identifying the stakeholders. Who are the people who ultimately judge whether your project is a success or a failure? You need to ask yourself a number of questions here. So who will the project's activities or outcomes affect? Understanding that will understand who your main stakeholders are. Who will contribute resources, people, time, space, tools, money to the project? Now, these are obviously important stakeholders. If they're providing resources, they're providing money, you know, the people who are paying you, all your stakeholders obviously need to be identified and need to be kept in touch. But generally, the people who are paying you are sort of first among equals, if you like. And finally, who will use and benefit from the project's output or project? So the customers here, if that's the case, you know, who's going to use the product of your project? By asking yourself those three questions, these should give you a good idea of your stakeholders. So at that point, then you should have your stakeholders give you their definitions of success for the project, what they're looking to get out of it. So in order to create your goals and objectives, you need to take that into account. Different stakeholders, as we said, are going to have different expectations. So you're going to need to meld them all together to make a manageable and coherent set of goals. Stakeholders might also change mid-project. You need to be aware of this and fight back against any unrealistic goals. There's a common problem in these sorts of projects, which is called scope creep, where what that means is that the scope of the project is, you know, maybe to do one thing, but then a number of different departments or a number of different stakeholders might look at it and go, well, if you're doing that, can we add this and this and this and this and this? And then all of a sudden the project isn't viable, or it's not solving the problem, or it becomes too convoluted and nobody really knows what the output's going to be. It's the project manager's job role to fight against scope creep and to manage the expectations of your stakeholders. And really all that is communication. So the next step in identifying our goals is identifying the needs of the project, again, defining the real problem that you're here to solve. Just to reiterate, it could be that the project proposed is not actually in a position to solve the problem, and so you're set up to fail from day one. it could be that the project does far more than it is required in order to solve the problem. So either way here, we're wasting time and money. So it's very important here to identify the needs of the project and define the problem that we're trying to solve. The next step in setting clear goals is using SMART principles. So SMART principles are a good way of defining the goals of a project. Goals should be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-based. So again, if let's say our project here is to, as we were working on in the workshop, the project is to create an event for promoting Wales or promoting Cardiff as a place for live music. So how do we do that? How do we make a SMART goal out of that? So specific should say exactly what we're trying to get. So this should be, you know, are we trying to sell tickets for this event? If that's the case, how many tickets do we need to sell? Are we trying to build awareness? If that's the case, you know, well, back in the day it would have been things like column inches, but you know, maybe now it's the social media engagements, things like that. Measurable then, how do we measure it? Again, this is things like column inches, social media engagement, things like that. So once we've been specific with our goal, we can then measure that to make sure that it's reaching what we need it to get to. Achievable is where we can sort of outline how we're going to achieve this. Are we going to do this by a poster campaign around Cardiff? Are we going to do this by search engine optimization? Are we going to do this by a social media campaign, promoted posts, things like that? How are we going to get the job done? Relevant. Now, the goals of the project should be relevant to the business. So this comes back to the business case. When we're making our SMART targets, our SMART goals, we can relate that back to the business case and make sure that it's viable, make sure that it's solving the problem. And finally, time-based. We need to put a time limit on our SMART targets. This allows us to track it allows us to monitor it. And a lot of the time with projects, there's deadlines in place. So this is something that we can work backwards from, and we'll come into scheduling in a bit more depth as we move forward. So that's using SMART principles. The final step in setting clear goals is recording those goals. So recording goals is good practice in order to ensure that the project stays on track and that everyone is working towards the same targets. So each task within a project should be working towards its overall goals. The goals should be working towards the business's objectives. Goals should be identified, recorded, and communicated with stakeholders throughout the life cycle of the project. So at this point, you need to read through your goals, consider your stakeholders, make sure you're happy, and then you can start moving on. It's worth understanding here that when we're setting our goals, there's likely to be trade-offs in place. So as we're managing our project by exception with the principles of PRINCE2, we know that there's tolerances in place for when trade-offs are needed. Now, there's a sort of equation here that we went through in the workshop, which is the scope of your project is equal to schedule plus budget. So these are the three related variables that most often determine what you can achieve. If you change one of these variables, then at least one of the others will need to change. So for example here, then if our budget decreases, then we'll either need to extend the schedule or we'll need to lessen the scope of the project. So if our budget goes down, then maybe we're not able to do as many of the features as we wanted to do within the project, or maybe we're not able to do it as quickly as we can. We need to take a little bit more time. If the scope of the project increases, then we may need an increase in time and maybe money in order to achieve the extra tasks that this adds. So if the scope changes, the schedule or the budget will also change. If the schedule changes, then, you know, if the schedule's decreased, then maybe we need to decrease the scope or increase the budget. It's a weighing scales here, and obviously, again, if we're managing our project by exception, then there's tolerances in place for this. So it's only when we go outside of tolerance that we need to communicate with the project board. So the next step then in planning is understanding our resource requirements. So at this stage, we'll need to break down each task as best we can, and then break it down again into subtasks. We need to put a time limit and a budget to each task in order to get a realistic understanding of what our resource needs are. On top of that, we also need to look at personnel. We need to look at what our requirements for personnel are, considering things like training, human resources, communication needs, potentially if our project team are in different places, We'll need to consider technology resources as well. We'll need to consider IT requirements. What sort of technology are we going to need? What software? What hardware? So at this point, we need to, again, understand the project's requirements against the goals. We need to look at time constraints. We need to look at budget. We need to look at personnel, and we need to look at technology and any other resources that we've got. And we need to ideally put a time limit to the tasks, and we need to put a budget towards each of them so that we can get a good understanding of the resources that we're going to require. When we move on from there, we've had a look at personnel, we've had a look at human resources. We can start allocating roles and responsibilities. So at this point, we need to list the skills that are required for the project, self-reflect on our own skills, and identify any other skills that might be needed. So if we do need other skills, which, you know, generally speaking, we often do, these could be filled by using experts from different areas of the organisation, or even using key stakeholders here. If the skills cannot be filled, then you can potentially identify training needs to fill those skills gaps within your project team. This obviously has the added benefit of giving development to your team as well, which makes them obviously a little bit more fulfilled in their role in the project. It's important at this stage as well to arrange meeting schedules at the earliest possible stage in order to get a commitment from all members of the project team, as well as agreeing the timing of reports so that everybody knows what is expected of them and when. This is an exercise in being as open as you possibly can be about how much work this is going to take and what the expectations are from you, the project manager, to the project team. Again, it could be the other way around as well. It could be managing expectations of the project board by saying, you know, these are our meeting schedules, you're welcome to attend to any of these, and this is how often that we're going to be sending reports up the ladder to you. You should also at this stage plan a kickoff meeting to go over the goals and plan with your team as much as possible. You can, in this kickoff meeting, you can propose a schedule, discuss the roles and responsibilities, and again, we'll look at scheduling tools a little bit later in the session, and we'll go into this in a bit more depth. But as a basic rule of thumb here, we can look at the project's absolute deadline and work backwards. That's a nice way of looking at scheduling. But again, we'll come back to that. Also in the planning stage now, we've got communication needs. So in our project, we've got three distinct groups who are going to require communication throughout the project. These groups are stakeholders, the project board or management, and the team members. Now, each of these are going to have different needs and expectations in terms of communication. So, you know, for example, if one of your stakeholders is Welsh Assembly Government, then they're going to expect formal, regular reports and briefings and meetings with minutes taken. There's going to be a lot of formal communication. Whereas another stakeholder who might be your customers might be, you know, informal via social media, via press releases, things like that. Management generally are going to require formal regular reports, depending on obviously the organisation that you're in. And your team, the project team, are going to just need sort of informal discussion and collaboration, maybe through collaborative technologies, maybe through things like Microsoft Teams and other things like that. Finally, the last thing that we need to look at in the planning stage of our project is our risk assessment. So if you remember in the workshop, we looked through a chart which we can use to assess our risks and see how they land in this chart, see what sort of risk they are. Now, we looked at a nice little formula there, which was the risk is equal to the severity of the risk multiplied by the likelihood of the risk. So what we've done is we've rated that between 1 to 5, so in terms of likelihood, 1 being a remote chance, so less than 1 in 1,000, and 5 being probable, as in more than a 1 in 3 chance. The severity then of harm is also ranked between 1 and 5, 1 being negligible, maybe a slight delay in work output, and 5 being very severe in that, you know, the project fails outright. So we need to understand the risks in those terms. So how likely is it that the risk is going to occur, and how severe is it going to be if it does occur? This allows us then to understand whether it's a low risk, a medium risk, a high risk, or an extremely high risk. So in the workshop, what we did is we figured out some risks, and then we rated them against the table. We came up with some ideas on how we can mitigate those risks, and then we gave them a new rating after we've put those mitigating factors in place. And so as an example here, One of them might be that there's optimistic time and cost estimates. So the project board or management have decided that the project is going to be done in no time at all and it's going to cost very little. And obviously you disagree with that. The severity of the harm there is that I'd say at least four severe. In that, some of the project's goals probably won't be met. If they're not giving you the time, they're not giving you the budget, then you're not going to be able to complete this project to its fruition with all the bells and whistles that you've agreed to, that the stakeholders are expecting. It could even be five. It could be that the project just fails. If they're not giving you the time and the money, then maybe the project's just not viable. So it's a pretty severe risk, this one. Now, likelihood is sort of up to you. Now, as we've said earlier, the communication between stakeholders is a very, very important part of the project manager's job role. So this is the mitigating factor, is having a business case in place, having a product description, a detailed product description, and putting in regular communication avenues with your stakeholders. This should hopefully mitigate this risk. So that might bring the likelihood down to possible or even unlikely if you've had these conversations and everybody's aware, maybe we can get that budget increased or get the schedule increased, something like that. Or maybe we can decrease the scope. We can manage people's expectations to know what we are able to do, what we're capable to do. So we gave you the template for that in the workshop. So that's something that's worth having a play with and worth just keeping in mind. But this is a good way of assessing risks and knowing whether or not that it's going to be viable or whether or not the activities or tasks of a project are going to be worthwhile or if they're going to be too risky. So that's the planning stage done and brings us into what's called the build-up. So the build-up is the section where you start to put your planning into place and prepare to begin the implementation. So step one of the build-up then is developing the budget. So when developing our budget, we need to know firstly how rigid it is. Are funds allocated per item or can the budget be adjusted? So, for example, public money or funding from certain stakeholders might be allocated for specific outgoings. One of our stakeholders might pay for one specific element of the project. So we need to know how rigid our budget is. We need to be aware of this. We also need to be prepared to track and monitor our budget against the project's progress throughout the life of the project. The project manager should keep the original budget as a reference and then a working budget that lets us know if we're going out of tolerance. So some of the costs that we need to budget into our spreadsheet, we need to consider things like, for instance, in a marketing thing, we might need to look at designers, we might need to look at search engine optimization, we might need to look at the creation of a website, we might need to look at web hosting. Potentially there's an email marketing campaign that we need to consider. Printed materials, what's the costs of that? Press advertising, how much are we paying for advertorials through the press? Street teams, are we paying people to do some street promotion, things like that? Influencer marketing even, are we using influencers to endorse our products, endorse our project even? These are all things that we need to consider. And obviously the budget of the project is going to differ wildly from project to project. The things that we're going to require, the resources, the activities, the tasks, they're all going to change drastically. So the budget is sort of on you, really. In the workshop, we gave you a spreadsheet, which was a basic budgeting spreadsheet that allows us to understand percentages and things like that as well. So have a little look at that, refamiliarize yourself with that. The next stage of the build-up is actually setting the schedule. So some considerations that you can take into account are, as we said earlier, the first thing we can think of is to start at our absolute deadline and work backwards from there. So if we know, particularly for things like events, we know there's a full-on deadline there that is absolutely unchangeable. So that's a good place to start. We can work backwards then, figure out how long each of the tasks are going to take and understand whether or not this is going to be achievable. We also need to know which deadlines have flexibility and which ones don't. As you know, certain deadlines like print deadlines and things like that are going to be pretty rigid. Things like a social media campaign, maybe you can start that earlier or start that a little bit later and put a little bit of extra budget in, things like that, you know. Another tip for setting the schedule is to break down long tasks into smaller tasks. As we sort of alluded to earlier, it's easier to manage when we know that The tasks are in bite-sized chunks. So it's the manage by stages principle from Prince 2 there. When we're setting our schedule, we should only go into as much detail as we as project managers can oversee. If we're breaking down tasks into, you know, create a Facebook post, then, you know, maybe the tasks there are create visual content, write text to coincide with it. You wouldn't necessarily go create visual content, open InDesign, pick a template, you know, all of these different stages within that. That's probably more than we need to consider. When we're developing our schedule, we only need to go into as much detail as we as project managers can oversee. The next tip, I guess, then is develop schedules logically. Don't schedule task C if A and B need to be completed first. We need to understand that. We need to consider schedules in a logical sense. We also should be recording all time segments in the same increments. You know, if you know, certain things are going to take a day, then certain things are going to take an hour, then we shouldn't be scheduling in terms of days. We should be scheduling in terms of hours, because that way we can get a more exact idea as to how the project schedule is going to run. Finally, we should also leave some flexibility in our schedule for handling problems that crop up. We should be over budgeting time, really, in this instance, just so that when things do go wrong, we've got the time in place that we can have a little play with that. We can have a little bit of tolerance in place. So in the workshop there, we looked at a number of different scheduling tools that could be used as part of your project management activities. The first tool we looked at was what's called a Gantt chart. So a Gantt chart is a widely used tool for scheduling and monitoring projects, and it clearly illustrates the status of your project, its estimated duration, the duration of each task, and the sequence of activities. Very easy to create a Gantt chart using basic tools such as Excel. However, obviously, project management software tools do have features to create detailed and intricate Gantt charts. They're a good way of staying on track and communicating the status of your project to stakeholders. In the workshop, we will have given you some templates for Gantt charts and things that... I gave you one basic Gantt chart that you can use in Excel, and I also gave you a template which sort of combines your Gantt chart into what's called a work breakdown schedule. And that gives you a little bit more information, allows you to put names next to each activity and stuff like that. So the Gantt chart can be as basic or as complex and as informative and useful as you want it to be, really. The next scheduling tool we looked at was called a PERT chart. So PERT charts are preferred by some project managers as they illustrate what's called the critical path, and they lay out the milestones of a project. So they're useful in communicating the big picture to team members, as it allows them to know then what other tasks are relying on the ones currently in motion. So a PERT chart shows when every project task within a phase should begin, how much time is scheduled for each task, all tasks that are in progress at any given time, and all the dependencies between outcomes, tasks, and events. So for example, like we alluded to earlier, if you can't complete task C until task B is done, then we know that we need to put a priority on task B, because task C, task D, E, and F rely on task C being done. So that's what is meant by the critical path analysis. Either way, whichever tool that you use for scheduling, it should have the ability to be revised if and when tasks go off schedule. That's the build-up stage. Now we're into implementation. So now that we've got our schedule, we've got our budget, we've got our team, we've got our plans, we're ready for day one and we're ready for the project to kick off. At this point, if we've done our jobs right in scheduling tasks and allocating roles, the project should begin to run with minimal input from the project manager. It's time to begin delegating the tasks to your team at this point. So there's two kinds of tasks that we're going to delegate, and these are routine and specialised. So routine work, which is just your sort of bog standard mundane work, that should be fairly delegated around the team. It should be given to everybody so that nobody feels like they're being lumped with all the rubbish work. We're making sure that other people don't have special treatment or anything like that. The routine work should be fairly delegated around the team. The other sort of tasks that we're going to delegate are specialised work. So specialised work should be delegated to team members who've got the skills to complete it. Simple as that. If you don't have those specialist skills within your team, this is something by this point you should have planned for. You should have had training in place, or you should have brought in other people from inside the organisation, brought in stakeholders, brought in people from outside the organisation. But Either way, the specialised work should be delegated to the team members who have the skills to complete it. The project manager then should keep their eye on the big picture and tasks that can't be delegated, such as managing the budget, for instance. Managing your team in a project in this day and age should be a matter of trust and track rather than command and control. So it used to be that, you know, the project manager would be expected to just delegate tasks around and, you know, command and control, whereas now it's more a case of you're delegating the tasks around and you're just trusting that these people have got the skills, they've got the resources required to get the task done, they've got the information that they need to succeed. So you've got to, at that point, just let them do their jobs, but request regular short reports and monitor their progress against the schedule and the budget. Another main area for the project manager to be responsible for is quality control. We need to avoid stakeholders being dissatisfied by the end result. So in order to maintain quality in our project, there's a few things that we can do. Back in the planning phase, we should have determined quality benchmarks. Again, these are things that could be involved in the manage by exception principle, in that there should be tolerances in place in terms of quality. This is ideally what we're looking for. This is as far down as we can go in terms of quality. We also need to consider the quality policy of the organisation, any stakeholder requirements, the scope of the project, and any legal or regulatory requirements when we're looking at quality. We need to conduct regular and thorough quality checks on all products and processes throughout the project. This can be at the same time as we're doing our lessons log. We should be checking that quality is being upheld. We need to examine the products using the most appropriate tools. For example, inspections, checklists, reports, sampling. We need to make sure that when we're checking for quality, we're using the right tools for the job to give us worthwhile and valuable information in terms of how quality is being upheld and how it's moving forward. And finally, as part of our quality control process, we need to accept or reject the products based on previously defined standards. We need to have these standards in place, we need to know about them, and we need to adhere to them. If the products of your project and not adhering and not meeting the standards of quality that have been previously defined, then we need to reject them. Or we need to work on them and we need to support the team in making sure that they can increase that quality. So really for running the project, that's a lot of what the job is. There's obviously tools that you can use to help you manage these projects. We've looked through Gantt charts, we've looked at PERT charts, I've given you the budget monitoring report, and in the workshop we looked at a progress report as well, which is something that can be used to report progress to stakeholders, to the project board. It's a nice sort of succinct document that allows you to say, this is where we're at, this is where we're going, these are the problems that we've encountered, these are the lessons that we've learned, are we on track, yes or no? So again, refamiliarise yourself with those before the assignment, and just generally before you start undertaking any other projects, I think these tools are very useful things. You know, the progress report is a good tool to report progress. The budget monitoring report is a good tool to monitor your budget and to keep track of it. And the Gantt chart or the PERT charts a good way of getting a big picture of your project. Obviously, on top of that, there's software that you can use. We looked at a number of different examples in the workshop, but software can help with managing projects, but it usually comes at a cost. So there's lots of reasonably priced project management software, but it does depend on your organisation. I know we looked at Monday and we looked at Basecamp, and I think off the top of my head, Monday was something like £7 a user per month, whereas Basecamp was $200 a month, regardless of the size of your organisation. So if you're working in a large organisation, then maybe something like the latter is going to be more suitable. If you're working for a smaller organisation and you've just got, it's just for you, just for one user, then, you know, the prior one is more acceptable. These tools were Monday, which was the one where you can pay £7 or so a month, and Basecamp, where you pay the $200 a month. On top of that, there's a lot of free options as well. There's open source project management software. So there's, just to give you a few examples, one of them was Trello. Trello is for individuals and teams who need a work pipeline. It's a good little tool, good for recording information and for you can move the tasks around, you can mark them as completed or things like that. Worth having to play around with, it is a good little tool. Meister Task is another one, which is used for combining project ideation, planning and execution. Kanban Flow is time tracking, that sort of thing. Friedcamp is another one. It's a project management tool, communications tool as well. And Asana, which is basically it's a to-do list tool, but it's a to-do list tool powerful enough to manage projects. There's a load more project management software that you can get for free or for low cost or for high cost, depending on the needs of your organization. And that's about it, really. So for the implementation stage, the rest of the job is just tracking progress, amending plans, monitoring budgets and schedules, and firefighting, dealing with problems as they occur. So you might have to deal with problems, as we said, like scope creep, where it's just communicating with the stakeholders that, you know, the scope is creeping up, so we're going to need more budget, or, you know, the project's not going to become viable. Delays in schedules, how do we deal with delays in schedules, budget overruns, people issues. These are common issues with projects that you as the project manager is going to have to deal with. So you're going to need to consider how we deal with these problems. Personally, what I would say is for all of these things, communication is key. As long as we're communicating with our stakeholders and communicating well with everybody involved, then all of these issues become much, much lesser. If you stay quiet about them and let them grow and let them snowball, then that's where the real issues are going to come into place. So in the closeout then, once we're concluding our project, depending on what the project is, you may need to do a handover to the next team as the completed project becomes regular operation. So for example, if your project was, you know, developing some software, you know, you've developed the software and now you're moving it, you're giving it to the next team of people who are going to use it, they need to receive your handover to understand how it all works, and to also understand that this is now their problem, not yours. You know, that's the point of the handover there. It's the project manager's job to get the client or the next team to assume that responsibility going forward, but also to be equipped to do so. Otherwise, as in the case of an event or a sales promotion, once the project is done, it's done. So the final task for the project manager is to complete the post-project review. So some of the reasons it's important to do your post-project review: obviously, this will improve future projects. It'll enable you to learn from experience. It'll give you those lessons logs. It'll help you identify key resources for future projects, ensure comparison against achievements to original objectives. You know, you can figure out the success or failure of it and get a good bit of feedback at the end there. The post-project review can also highlight any issues for future projects, things like health and safety potentially, any problems, any needs in training, any shortages in terms of resources, increases in costs, all of these things that inform the outcome of the project. You know, was the project successful? Was it unsuccessful? Why? This is what the post-project review can tell us. So again, in the workshop, I handed out a post-project review so that you could have a look through it and just ensure that you're happy with that. So once you're all done, you've done your post-project review, you've done your handover, the very last thing to do is thank everyone in your team, thank all your stakeholders for all their hard work, everything like that, and prepare to move on to the next project. And just generally give yourself a nice pat on the back. So that's about it for me. Before I leave you then, I just wanted to go through a couple of things with the assignment. So the assignment is 3.5 hours long. It consists of three tasks. So you've got two short answer questions tasks, and you've got one report. The assignment will give you the option of doing a scenario or the option of doing it on a project of your choice. The scenario given to you will give you everything you need to understand the scope of the project and how it went. It'll have progress reports and things like that, so you can use that to do your report and your review on the project. If you are doing it on a project that you've created, if it's based on your own project, then potentially you're going to need to create things like Gantt charts, PERT charts, progress reports, budget reports, things like that, to inform the project. So you might need to use things that you've got from your organization, or you might need to sort of make it up on the fly and tell a story using these resources. The templates that were provided in the workshop as well, you can use that during the assignments. So if you want to use those templates to make a budget report, to make the progress report, Gantt charts, all of those sorts of things, please feel free to use them in the assignment. And obviously, please feel free to use them in any future projects that you're going to be undertaking. So, with that in mind, that's everything from me. So, thank you very much. Good luck. Diolch yn fawr. Pob lwc.